opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome one and all to Cooking Like a Pro. We're excited to be here. I'm always excited to be here. I'm excited. It's just fun. I like talking on the radio. This is Chef Kel. Again, Cooking Like a Pro with Mrs. Chef Krista.
Hello. You just like talking, period.
Yeah. My dad, I remember saying that he thought I'd either be a chef or a preacher. And I don't know why, but he does call me Gabby. He has called me that a few times. So is my mother. You know, but... You know, when you spend a life, and especially in the hospitality industry, you talk to a lot of people, and then I kind of like to talk to people anyway, so it works out.
You are indeed an extrovert.
Okay, well, started right off the bat using fancy words. All right, so I wanted to talk about a variety of things today. Again, we appreciate you listening here, KCNR 1460 AM or 96.5 FM, and if you... would like to call. Big Ben is on the phone lines. He'd be happy to take your question at 530-605-4567. Or you can go into cookinglikeapropodcast.net and type that in there. But we'd love to get some input if you have any questions you have that are food and or hospitality related. But subjects for today, first off, I wanted to start off with leftovers. And I know we've talked about this quite a few times, but I had some examples of leftovers that I wanted to share with you. And I think it's just the idea of starting to think of what food flavors and profiles kind of go together. So we had a small party, and we had some artichoke mushroom sauce. It goes over a chicken dish. It's called Chicken Jerusalem, real popular dish. But all I had to do is just add some half and half, and then we had a delicious soup. You know, where you say, oh, what am I going to do with this sauce? Well, it's just as easy. It's an easy fix. Just, you know, lighten up the viscosity because the sauce is going to be generally thicker than a soup would be. And there you go. That was an easy one.
Yeah, you could even add a little more broth to it, a little chicken base, a little.
Yeah. And we had some chicken. So I pounded some of that out for make some little chicken fingers and chicken fillets. But something that we also had left over was that Krista made butter, and I want her to walk through that step and the steps in that process with you. But we had this extra buttermilk. So I'm like, well, that's just perfect. So I threw the chicken in the buttermilk and just got this great, rich buttermilk flavor. So buttermilk is a byproduct. Is that what you would call it?
Pretty much, yeah. So okay. You're going to end up, because you start with cream, heavy cream.
Okay.
And you're going to end up with butter fat, which is what we call butter, and butter milk. Because you're going to, as you churn the buttermilk comes off of it because it separates out.
So the process from the beginning was you take these two ingredients and you started them a couple of days early.
Yeah.
And I wasn't paying attention. So
this,
how did you start?
This is not just straight butter. You can churn just cream. This is a cultured butter.
Okay.
And by culture, you're adding some bacteria, healthy bacteria into it so that it gets a little more of a tangy flavor to it.
Okay.
And I've made it twice. I made some for Easter and I made some for this birthday party last week. You start with cream, just heavy whipping cream, and you add a little bit of yogurt to it, a nice full fat yogurt, Greek style. Usually you can either do a non-fat, which is what I did for the second one, or the first time I used an orange yogurt. Okay. So because I was making kind of a sweeter Easter bread, I went ahead and made a sweeter butter, so it had kind of an orange flavor to it.
So did this, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. So what made it a culture?
The
using the yogurt, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So this had to sit for a couple of days.
So it sat for 2 days.
Okay. And why is it sitting?
Because the bacteria needs time to culture Just like if you're, let's say you're making, what do you call it, the cabbage. If you make cabbage.
Oh, and like
you
said fermented that, cabbage.
It's a fermentation process.
Okay.
So you're letting those cultures grow and change and build up. So it actually thickens the cream.
Mm-hmm.
And so after 2 days, you've got this really nice, thick, creamy cream that now I take and I put it into a food processor. And I turn it on. And after a couple of minutes, you will start to see the butter fat solids start to come together, which you'll recognize as butter, and the butter milk, which is a lighter
milk. That was kind of the excess that came off, the liquid stuff.
They start separating.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that was like, I've never had better buttermilk, and I'm not a big buttermilk fan. I don't drink it regularly.
Yeah, and it's just true buttermilk.
True
buttermilk is the milk that comes off of making butter. Mm-hmm. And so because it also had the acidity to it because of the yogurt. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have made just straight, if you sometimes you have the kids and you're teaching them, you'll take the cream and you'll put it in the jar and you'll have them sit there and shake it, and shake it. It's the same process.
So you just agitate it until it.
Yeah, so then you get the butter round that comes out of it, and then you've got the buttermilk that comes off
of it. An emulsification.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got this butter that you've seen. So that's what you gave me, and then I took it from there, and that's where I seasoned it, right, with the garlic and the parsley and the white pepper. Okay.
The separation process takes a little bit of work. This is the most work, is, you know, getting it through the food processor, then straining out the buttermilk, getting that to drain, actually putting a little bit of cheesecloth to make sure I get all as much buttermilk off of it as I can and get it to a nice ball, and then you actually knead it a little bit, kind of like when you're making bread, where you'll knead it, and then you rinse it in really cold water so that it gets that last little bit of buttermilk off of it and then really gets it into a nice solid form. Then that's what you took and you seasoned it, which I wasn't there for that process. I made the butter. How did you make that wonderful garlic butter?
Well, we had the minced garlic. Yeah, in oil, so I added that. But the one thing I did, and a little bit of white pepper, a little bit of salt, and a little bit of chopped parsley. But the one thing I didn't have to do is I started with a hook, and I'm thinking, well, I'm making whipped butter. Hook's not going to work. So I, off the KitchenAid, I got rid of the hook and put a whip on there. And then I just kind of, I actually took a piece of plastic and kind of laid a plastic wrap and kind of put it around the bowl because it was kind of wanting to climb the edge when it was spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And I just cranked that sucker, and that's what whipped it and brought it back into just one solid mix.
So how much, if, let's say somebody has a stick of butter, if they don't want to go through the whole process of making butter from scratch, which I do encourage it, cultured butter
is
very different and very fun,
and
it's very satisfying,
great
flavor, but if you were just at home and you got a stick of butter, how do you make a fantastic garlic butter out of that?
Well, so a stick of butter is going to be a quarter cup, you know, so you're probably looking at maybe
half cup.
Or half a cup, I'm sorry. Yep, 4 ounces. And then you're going to add, you know, just maybe just a dash of, I would use secret salt, which is what we use, which is, has a little bit of granulated garlic, a little bit of kosher salt, and then some white pepper. And then, you know, maybe a teaspoon of parsley and half a teaspoon of minced garlic.
Or if you really want to be bold, have a full teaspoon or plus of garlic?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how much garlic you like. I mean, I remember there was this restaurant that Grandpa used to take us to. It's called Louis Cairo's. They're still down there. We'd go by there on the way to the coast when we were going abalonian. And this place, it had garlic bread, but then they had, like, extra, like, they call it the Louis Cairo's garlic bread. And the garlic bread was like a quarter of an inch thick on top. I mean, you're not kissing anybody for several months after eating that garlic bread. You have to, because the garlic's not even cooked, you know, I mean, lightly toasted, but you know, a half inch of garlic, you know, it's a lot.
But I think the trick too to making the garlic butter is the butter needs to be room temperature.
Yeah, definitely need it to be soft. That's a good point.
But don't melt it, because that'll take it into a totally different direction. It'll change the structure of the butter, so just melt it to room temperature, then whip it.
Yeah, and again, I think that it's something that, you know, first off, when you want to talk about shelf life and how long something's going to last, it's going to last a long time. We ended up having quite a bit left over. So I think we put it in little cups, and some of it actually just went into the freezer. It's going to last in the same way that butter will. I mean, we're talking, you know, weeks. And you just got some great. D. McCurio's restaurant, when we started, when we opened in 1900s, 1900 and, 89, and that's we had garlic butter on the table. People just love that garlic butter. They walk in, the first thing they get as soon as they sit down, warm baguette slices and garlic butter. So it brings back lots of memories. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be coming back, though. We're going to be talking about tri-tip. I did get a question on tri-tip, on cooking it and cooking it correctly and making sure it's not tough. So we'll be back with that. Cooking Like a Pro, we'll be back in just a moment.
Bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden. Get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer.
But join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. Hey, we'd like to take a moment here to thank our sponsor, Charlu's Tap House in Anderson. If you love great pizza, cold drinks, and a good time, then you got to check it out. Charlu's Tap House, formerly Mary's Pizza Shack, Charlu's is serving up homemade Italian classics, just like Grandma Noni used to make. And I tell you, that means everything. That means pizza. That means pastas. That means great salads, appetizers, burgers, not to mention creamy house gelato. I don't know if Grandma Mary was making gelato or not, but Charlie's doing a great job down there with Kathy, and you can even pour your own beer from the premier epic selection of great beers at their beer wall, their tap wall. If you got kids, Charlie's is open. An adventure room meeting all your kids' birthday needs. Little ones can bounce and jump and play in a massive inflatable playground. Plus, they can become pizza pros alongside Charlie himself, making their own pie. He will show them how to do that. So whether it's date night, a business lunch, or birthday bash, Charlie's has you covered. Don't forget to join their rewards program for instant perks just south of town in the Gateway Shopping Center. Stop by charlie's.com to grab your first rewards. All right, so tri-tip. I said we're going to come back with tri-tip for a couple reasons. One is I'm taking a trip with my tri-tip back to Tennessee. A lot of tease there coming up next month. Actually, maybe it's in June. Was today still April or is it May yet?
I think we're right on the cusp.
Right on the cusp. Anyway, they don't never heard of tri-tip back there. Yeah, and that's just it's just a cut of the meat. The thing about the tri-tip is if you look at beef and you look at the butt end of it, of the animal, like on a pig, what you would make ham out of, then this is, you know, like your beef round. It's actually right in front of that, right above that those back legs. It's that's where the cut is, and it's not a real hard working muscle, so it's going to be nice and tender, and you know, of course, that makes it juicy and everything else. But it's not a muscle that's working that's getting a lot of that connective tissue. It's actually right below the top sirloin. And then the sirloin is, of course, is where you get your tenderloin, your strip loin, your New York, your filet, your porterhouse, and your T-bone steak. So it's actually right underneath that. So it's a beautiful spot that doesn't, actually, some people even call it the poor man's brisket, but you know, the brisket is from the front part of the animal, same basic spot right behind the leg. But anyway, tri-tip, that's where it comes from, at least on the animal, but it comes from California, right?
Well, the name tri-tip does. So they do have the cut in other regions, of course. I mean, if cow gets...
Oh, there's they don't throw it away.
Yeah, on the East Coast, they call it a Newport steak.
Newport, it's called Newport. It's called bottom sirloin butt. I know people have called it triangle tip. Mm-hmm. And again, even a poor man's brisket. So there's a lot of things, but for what it, you know, it was coined here, down in Santanella. And I think that had a lot to do with the seasoning too.
Yeah, Santa Maria barbecue really came about in the 50s, but a lot of it even started back to, you know, back in the 1800s with the caballos and the Spanish and bringing over, you know, having the panquito beans. So it's a whole tradition down in the Santa Maria area, which I grew up with because my mom was from San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. So I was very familiar growing up with tri-tip and beans and salad and garlic bread. It is very traditional.
Yeah. And the thing that's, you have to be careful of, and the gentleman that had asked me this, his concern was that every time he goes to his friend's house, his friend always loves to do tri-tip, and it's just, you know, dry, hard as, you know, chewy, and he just takes it home and feeds it to his dog, is what his words were. But I think that a lot of it has to do with knowing how to cook it right, but also knowing how to cut it properly and knowing how to rest. So to go through the process, you want to get a tri-tip and you want to season it. You don't want to season it too far in advance, especially if there's any sodium in your seasoning, whether it's a marinade or whether it's a dry rub. Or a wet rub. They use those as well. So you don't want to season it too far in advance because it's going to pull the moisture out of the meat. It's the moisture, it's the juice. And then you want to throw it on the grill. I season it right before I throw it on generally. You want to cook it on each side. Cook it evenly on each side. I would say let's say something's going to take 20 minutes to cook. Then I would cook it on the first side down for 5 minutes. Then I would flip it over for 5 minutes. Then I'd flip it back for 5, and then the last time for 5. So it cooks for 20 minutes, but it's even from both sides. I mean, if you've ever had a steak that was kind of like gray all the way to the middle and then maybe pink or red on just one side, it just didn't get flipped often enough. And you always want to always flip meat 4 times. So that's what I do. But, you know, it's something that it's real popular here. It was just interesting when I went back and they had no idea what I was talking about. So I think I'm going to sneak some in my luggage. But they also have a special seasoning that they use that you can get down at, I think they have it at Split P. Anderson's down there too, in Santanella. But,
I'm not sure. I mean, it's specifically Santa Maria style. There's different, you know, different places down there that will have their own seasoning. It's, you know, it's a lot of garlic. Mm. Yeah, because a Spanish and Italian heritage is pretty much where the Santa Maria barbecue comes from. So you have pepper and garlic and things like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned garlic, so I wanted to jump back on something. I did get a question sent to me, and it had to do about how much of that, how long, basically about how much garlic butter you would make. And I would say that you want to make enough that's, you know, it's going to last for several months. I mean, if you put it in the freezer, if you put it in the fridge, it's going to last for probably, you know, 5 or 6 weeks anyway. So just kind of depending on the usage. So kind of go from there. I would probably start with the half cup, the 4 ounces, just one stick. With, you know, the teaspoon of parsley and half teaspoon of garlic or more if you want, a little white pepper, a little salt, and just kind of go from there and try that. But again, flavored butter, it's great. You know, I mean, it's just a nice change. And that was one thing that was real, real, again, popular at DiMicurio's. But again, getting back to the tri-tip, one of the things where people make a huge mistake, and there's actually two parts to this. One is that they don't let it rest. and resting, we mean that we want the meat to calm down. Remember, it's cooking over high heat, over open flame, or even if it's in an oven, as high temp. So it's got all this activity going on. So if you pull it out and you don't let it rest, when you slice it with all that activity going on, all of a sudden there's a way out for that juice to go. And it's going to go out and it's going to, you know, cover your cutting board, but you're losing flavor when you do that. And I've had people ask about how much time. I would say between 10 and 15 minutes. It's not going to get cold, and you don't want to put it someplace cool. You just want to put it someplace where it's more of an ambient temperature and allow it to do that activity that's going on inside of that roast to kind of slow down. And then the most crucial part, after all of those things are done perfect, is cutting it. And when you cut it, you just always need to know, cut across the grain. Always remember to cut across the grain. If you don't, then you're having these real long muscle fibers that are, you know, maybe 3 or 4 inches long. And it's, I don't know if you've ever gone to a place. I did this once. I went into a place for breakfast, and I really like corned beef and hash, and they had cut it the wrong way. Similar thing, where it was just long and tough and stringy. So if you ever get meat and it's stringy, you know, right off the bat, it was cut incorrectly. You cut across the grain, never with the grain. Never, ever, ever. I mean, I can't ever think of a reason why you'd cut with the grain unless, of course, you had, I don't know, wanted to try out new dentures or something.
Well, and the thinner you slice it, too, will make it even more tender. So if you do like a half-inch thick slice as opposed to a quarter inch, as opposed to maybe a 16th of an inch, the thinner you slice, the more tender it's going to be.
Yeah, because again, you're chewing smaller muscle fibers.
Yeah.
And so kind of be thinking along those lines with your tri-tip. And I did want to touch base. I mentioned these chicken fingers and chicken fillets that I breaded in the dry, wet, dry in the first segment. So I just wanted to finish on the process of breading. Remember, it's always dry, wet, dry. And I mentioned that a lot, but just to explain it, whatever you're breading is moist. In my case, I'm breading chicken. Well, chicken is wet. I mean, it's the exterior of it's wet. So it needs to go into something dry in order to go into something secondary wet. So that wet will stick to dry. But if you took your chicken and you didn't put it in flour before you put it in egg wash or buttermilk, it wouldn't stay because there's nothing for the egg wash or the buttermilk to hold onto. So now you've got your chicken that's been put in the flour, and that's what we used in this case, then gone into buttermilk. But again, it could be a mixture of egg wash, anything along those lines. And then the dry, we used a couple different things. We did some with panko, and we did some with just potato buds, like potato pearls, something like you'd use to make mashed potatoes. And it came out great.
Yeah, I've even used, if I don't have buttermilk for the liquid dip, I will use buttermilk powder, dried buttermilk, as that first contact instead of flour. It gives it a great flavor.
Yeah, it would add that tanginess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't, I guess I know you can get powdered everything. I know you just like powdered milk, but I don't think I've ever bought powdered buttermilk.
Yeah, you can get it, and I've used that a few times to make the chicken sticks. And they're really good. Now, going back to the chicken fingers that you made, did you cut those specifically off of a chicken breast to get those to those size? Did you pound them? How did you get to that point?
Yeah, we had a birthday party that we were prepping for, and I wanted all the pieces of chicken to be the same size. And a lot of times you get chicken now, and it can be anywhere between, you know, something that looks like, a squab or a baby pigeon all the way up to a turkey. And it's because the breast sizes are quite a bit different because of the way that they're, you know, they're raising chickens, and especially the ones that they're trying to raise too fast, to be honest. The breasts are different sizes, so I just kind of trimmed those down, and then I just used the pieces that were, that came off of that we didn't use for the birthday party, and just lightly pound them out to put a piece of plastic, and I got a nice heavy bottom cutting board, put the chicken on there, put a piece of plastic on top, and then just lightly pound that down with the mallet, with the little prongs on the prong side. And
so you cut the chicken lengthwise. So if you're thinking of a loaf, you've got your kind of your teardrop, you're going lengthwise from the short end to the short end.
Yeah, so everything I trimmed into a teardrop, so all the pieces were the same size on the teardrop. But, you know, They love that. That was actually, they had the chicken Jerusalem, and we had leftovers to make a variety of things, including our artichoke mushroom soup and chicken fingers and chicken fillets. So we got all kinds of stuff. Again, you need to use your leftovers. And then if you ever have any questions on Tri-Tip, we do have a barbecue guide. You can get that at Culinarily Yours, and that's something you can go on there and get for free. Tell you everything you need to know about that. We're going to take a quick break and Cooking Like a Pro with Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro, Cooking Like a Pro. Yeah, Tutti Frutti, there we go. Little Richard, yeah. So we're going into something that's a little bit fruity here. And I picked up a papaya the other day when I was at the store, and it looked, you know, good looking, good shape papaya.
Didn't you get that at a grocery outlet?
Yeah, I got that at a grocery outlet.
I would not think you would go to a grocery outlet for a papaya.
It's amazing what they have. They have a little bit of everything, and I love shopping there. But anyway, so I picked this up, and Krista had never had one before. Now, we used to use, back in the day, this was decades ago, we did a really nice Asian salad, and we used green papaya, so unripe papaya, and they would slice it, and you can get it at the Asian market here in town. Most of you, if there's an Asian market in your area, you can go there. And they sell it by the bag, but it's almost like what I would call vermicelli or, you know, really thin, not even shoestring.
More so like, almost like a slaw.
Yeah, but super long mm-hmm. strands of, and, they have a tool that they use to cut that. And it's great as a salad component to add, you know, fiber and of course some flavor and a variety of things. But this was a ripe papaya and it was just beautiful, perfectly ripe. But Chris had never had it before. I'm sure she's had it like in fruit salad or something like that mixed up. But it was a little shocking to her. Yeah, because were you planning on something being sweeter? Or?
Yes, I was. Well, in my mind, I'm thinking like a mango, but it wasn't. I'm thinking mango, guava, papaya. I think it was more tropical, and it was not. And I had just had a really sweet drink, and I was wait, this is not sweet.
Yeah. The sweetness is much less than you'd find in a papaya. I mean, excuse me, in a mango. I would go to the mango as being the sweetest, and then probably a guava, and then a papaya. But the sweetness is also going to be dependent on how long it grows, because the longer it grows, the more, sugar develops in there, and that increases the Brix count, B-R-I-X. That's just the term we use for the volume of sugar that you'll find in certain different things. They use it in, soda pops and stuff as a term. What I wanted to get into on this was two things. I wanted to finish up on this, on the papaya. This one here, it actually came from Mexico and said make sure to wash and disinfect before you consume it, which of course we did. So that's all that little information that's on that little tag that we just peel off and throw in the garbage. So, and if you want to know a little bit more about what you're eating, you can always read that. It gives you some information. But the thing was, it wasn't real sweet. So I tried it with some salt and pepper, and it was delicious. It was kind of like salt and pepper on cantaloupe.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, this is like the texture I would think of a cantaloupe. I'm curious how many people out there even know to try putting salt and pepper on a cantaloupe.
Yeah, it just brings out the flavor. Well, remember, salt's going to be a flavor enhancer, so whatever is there, it's going to bring out more of it. So if your cantaloupe maybe isn't quite ripe, then, if it's got some sweetness, it could bring out a little bit more.
Yeah, so I would say it's almost like a cross between an avocado and a melon.
It tastes like an avocado in my mouth, in the sense of its creaminess.
Yes,
it was much more creamier than mango. But I wanted to chat about this because we talked a little bit about barbecue earlier. And as we're going into the summer season and we start thinking a little bit more about, grilling and cooking outside, and a lot of times people think, ketchup, barbecue sauce, something that's kind of a heavy, sauce. It's almost kind of matted when you put it on meat. And the one thing you'll notice on those sauces is they're almost always just chock full of, corn syrup. And that's the sugar component on there. And you really don't want that corn syrup in there. So this mangoes is just to make like a relish is just a great alternative. And I've had it at all my restaurants. I've done it on salmon, on halibut. I've done it. It actually works great on chicken as well. But you want to get some mangoes and you want to, do we have this recipe online?
No. No, we haven't used this.
All right. Well, we'll work on getting this online for you. But you get yourself a mango, if you want to get jarred mango, that's something that, they never used to have, but now you can just about get anything you want in a jar that's already peeled and ready to go, but just make sure you look at the ingredients and see how much sugar was actually added to it, because you really, that's going to make a big difference in what it tastes like. But get that mango that's nice and soft, and you're going to dice that up, and usually use a combination of tomatoes, which are also diced small. Now it's a relish, so we're going to spoon it on a piece of fish, piece of roasted fish, or maybe a piece of chicken. So we want everything to be maybe comparing it to like a chunky salsa.
Yeah, there you go.
Like something like a chunky salsa that you would get. And you could call it a mango salsa as much as a mango relish. It does have tomatoes in it. Not that tomatoes are a defining, ingredient in a salsa. I've had salsas made out of everything before.
Is a combination equal balance of tomato and mango, or is it a little more mango heavy or a little more tomato heavy as far as your ratios?
I'd go a little bit more mango, because when you look at a recipe, the first ingredient is the way a recipe is supposed to be written is the what's listed on the top is there's more volume
the
of
biggest
that.
Bulk, yes.
Yeah, kind of like if you had a thing of, picked up a can of beef stew or something, and you looked at the ingredients, whatever it says most on there first, if it's beef, then it's going to be listed first, and then there's potatoes, and it's carrots, and it's celery, onion, whatever. So this one here, this recipe here, mango is first, but it's about equal parts mango and Roma tomatoes. And I use a Roma tomato because they'll hold their structure better. They're a firmer tomato. They don't have as much water in them.
You're also going to leave the skin on. You're not going to blanch and peel off the skins on this one.
You can. Now, this recipe here, I don't. But if you're someone that has any kind of a challenge with the skin on tomatoes, because remember, they go right through you. So, I mean, they don't really serve much of a purpose that I know of. Maybe there's fiber in there. I don't know. But they don't serve much of a purpose. So I would probably blanch those. And to do that, I would just take the tomato and the opposite of the vine side. Okay, the tomato comes off a vine. The opposite side, just make a little X on there. Maybe like 1 inch X going, you know, one to left to right, then right to left. And then just drop it in boiling water for 20 seconds, 30 seconds, pull it out. And then that skin comes right off.
Do you just drop it into shock, into an ice water?
Yeah, yeah. So the, that's what we have. That's the term we use is shocking. So, you know, boiling water, 30 seconds, throw it into the cool water, let that you know, pull it right off once it cools down, and then dice that up. And then really, I use red onion because red onions, you know, out of the different onions that are out there, and there's a lot of them. I know I make a cream of seven onion soup. We actually have a YouTube video on
that. Yes,
that one is online. You can go to the and watch the YouTube video on how to make cream of seven onion soup. It's actually a really sweet soup. Sounds strange, but when you get done with it, it's an interesting soup. I've guests have always you know, loved it when we've made it in the past. But a red onion is going to be sweeter generally, you know, like a Bermuda onion, and then a yellow onion is going to be kind of medium, heat, and then a white onion will generally be, a little bit stronger. But remember, all these things, just like peppers, the older they get, the hotter they get. And they get a lot of things. They'll get more woody. They'll get more sparse, you know, too, but they will get hotter. So then some green onions. We have some little chopped green onions in there. I like a little bit of pineapple juice. Adds a little sweetness. And then this recipe calls for 1.5 jalapenos. And I was talking to mom and dad about this because, mom had some really nice poblanos that she got for dad. She was going to make some chili rellenos. So she was peeling them when I was there and we were talking about that. But you can take the seeds and the shoulders, which the seeds are connected to. You take that out and you just get this, just the true natural flavor of the fruit. And remember when we talk about peppers, they're in the fruit category, the fruit family. So we take this jalapeno, we clean it out, and you don't have all that heat, but you got that great flavor. Oh, speaking of that, I had some strawberry habanero jam. Oh, we're going to talk about that actually in the next segment. So, so we're talking about jalapenos, maybe 1.5, and then a little bit of lime juice, some cilantro, some fresh ginger, you know, maybe a little salt. And one thing I like for heat is I like a sambal oleic. So sambal oleic, it's S-A-M-B-A-L, sambal oleic, O-E-L-E-K, two words, O-E-L-E-K, and it's a chili paste, and it just gives such a wonderful flavor. Think of it as kind of like a similar to a sriracha, but sriracha is, you know, more of a paste.
Yeah, which both are a little bit too strong for me, so I would probably lean towards like a green Tabasco.
Yeah, green Tabasco is a great one. They have the traditional, you know, red that comes from, you know, it's just a cayenne pepper. And then they have a jalapeno one that's green. And that one, I put that on just a little bit of everything, about everything but ice cream.
Now, what if you switched out the Bermuda? Because sometimes Bermuda onion can be a little bit much. What if you did a shallot that's a little sweeter?
You know, again, and that's the wonderful thing about, you know, recipes and thinking outside the box. I mean, you know, you can say, whoa, I have all these ingredients, but I don't have any red onion, but I got a yellow onion. Okay, well, then use a yellow onion. Maybe use a little less. It doesn't really matter. Maybe you don't have any pineapple juice, but maybe you've got some peach juice. Or, you know, maybe you've got some orange juice. Any of those things. Maybe you got a little bit of lemon juice. Something's a little stronger, you'd use a little bit less. But, you know, you can go ahead and you can mix and match these things and make your own thing. That's kind of what recipes are. You think out of the box and you kind of come up with your own idea out of, you know, something that you're reading.
So basically this is going to come down to, it's a fruit as your base.
It's a fruit relish.
You're going to add a little bit of acid to it. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to add some heat through some sort of a pepper. That's the basic to this salsa.
Yeah. The acid would be, in this case, would be the lime juice. And this is also one of those recipes. There's recipes out there that you want to make. There are things that just taste better with time. Off the top of my head, the things I think of are spaghetti sauce, chili, a lot of these things that just get better with time because they kind of meld together and the flavors disperse more throughout the volume of what you're eating. And it's just, you know, the flavor profile gets enhanced because of this time that it has together. This particular, when you're making a relish like this, you want it light and crisp and refreshing. That's really the whole idea of going with something like a mango relish is you want to do something that's really refreshing. So you'd have all these ingredients together, which we have them all together, right in front of me right now with a bowl. So what is that called? I've got all my ingredients together.
Mise en place.
Mise en place. Mise en place. And then I'm going to take, all these ingredients and throw them in there and literally, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes to allow it to meld together and you're ready to go. And again, you want light, crisp. You want those textures in there, those textural components of having that crisp, you know, onion and the green onion and even the jalapeno, and then the other thing melts together. So it's a great, so mango relish. So we will look at it. If you're interested in that, you just reach out to us and we will figure out a way to get that recipe to you. So we're going to take our last break here at Cooking Like a Pro. We appreciate you listening and we will be back in just a moment.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Redding Rodeo is back in Bucking on the River, May 14th through 17th, celebrating 77 years of nonstop rodeo action, world champion cowboys competing in the largest four-day rodeo in Northern California. Don't miss our 77th annual Redding Rodeo tradition. Get your tickets now only at ReddingRodeo.com before they're gone. Redding Rodeo, where the West comes alive, May 14th through 17th.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope. That's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Have you ever wanted to unlock your musical potential? Cascade Curations not only has great music, art, and fashion, we also offer fun and exciting music lessons for all ages and skill levels. Whether you dream of playing the piano, guitar, drums, or vocals, our instructors will guide you every step of the way. With flexible scheduling and personalized instruction, you'll be playing your own tunes in no time. Don't just listen to music, create it. Call or text us at 530-255-4855 to book your first lesson. Cascade Curations, where we believe anyone can learn to play their own song.
There you go. Yeah, Michael Jackson. Jam. That's the only song I could find that said jam. I don't know if he was literally talking about jam.
No, you're jamming out. I danced to that in high school.
Oh, my goodness.
That was one of our routine songs. Man, you're bringing me back to, whoa, teen days.
Perked up there. Yeah,
I did.
Well, you know, I also wanted to mention something that was in my heart to mention, too. I don't mention this much, but my son Joshua and his wife April and my grandson, my only grandson, Luke, he's so cute. But anyway, they have a restaurant just south of where we record our show here in Redding, California, called Cheesecakes. So if you get a chance to go in there, tell them Dad sent you. Dad and Krista sent you. But anyway, they just do a great job with especially salads at lunchtime, but they have a beautiful dinner menu as well, and they're open Monday through Friday.
I love the pork chop.
Yep.
That's my favorite.
But so we had jam come on there and got you all excited because I wanted to talk a little bit about jam and jelly, mainly because I went over to Mom's yesterday, like I mentioned earlier, and Mom and Dad were making jam. They actually made a couple different ones. They made, I think they had one with habanero, which I brought one home. And then then they also had one with jalapeno. And the thing that is so cool about jams and jellies is when I think of a jam, now remember jam has crushed fruit in it. All right, both of them are pretty much the same, except for a jelly is generally it's got that fruit flavor that's been extracted, but it's been strained. And actually, the jellies can be vegetable jellies, wine jellies, flour. Or you can make a jelly out of things like lavender. There's a lot of different things you can do with jelly that you normally wouldn't do with jam. And I always think that like gelled because it's got that pectin in there, which is what you add, as the gelatin to bring it all together. But I know that think about that turkey, that little, you know, little gelled, amount of protein that's at the bottom of your turkey after you roast it the next morning when you get up, or maybe your prime rib. You got that. In the chef business, we always call that liquid gold. Because it was just pure, perfect flavor. But when you're making a jam and jelly, your jams are sweet. Jelly is generally sweet too, but if I was going to take, some kind of a concoction like this and make it, I wanted to make it savory, meaning not sweet, then it would be a jelly. It'd be something that I would strain out. But again, jams and jellies, love them.
But you do make a wonderful bacon jam, which we shouldn't talk about today, but I think in the future we need to talk about bacon jam.
Yeah, I'll have to give that recipe out. But, again, you don't need a lot of pectin either. You're just like about 1%, I mean, by a weight. So, you know, and practice and try it. You know, get a recipe that works. And if it's not as stiff, as you want and spreadable, then, you know, a little bit more pectin or a little bit less, depending on that. You know, the thing about pectin is it's soluble, right? So it will dissolve in water. So it's something that's better than, you know, throwing in, you know, whatever, like powdered gelatin.
It's very easy when you get like a Sure Gel or whatever pectin box you get to follow their recipes. They are tried, they are true. Yeah. You're basically making a simple syrup with fruit. Mm-hmm. So instead of water and sugar, you're using fruit and sugar. The fruit has, you know, the water component. It's got the flavors and the fibers from the fruit. And then you're just adding that gelatin or the pectin to just tighten it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Think J-E-L-L-O.
Yeah. You know what I really like is the contrast that they did with this by making a jam and then having the habanero and or the they didn't have both, but they had a separate one that was strawberry and habanero, and then one that was strawberry and jalapeno. And when you, because you got all that natural sugar that's in there, which sugar automatically combats the active ingredient in heat, which is capsaicin. So you can eat it without it tasting really, really hot. And again, I would still take out the seeds. I would take out the shoulders and just use the actual fruit of the pepper, just the actual flesh of the pepper. But then you're getting this pure flavor of jalapeno. And I put it on some crackers because I wouldn't. It didn't feel like making toast, and it was absolutely delicious. But you know, you get that heat, and I guess the best way to know if your heat level is right would be that it's sweet and you got that beautiful flavor, and then you get that heat at the very end after you swallow it, because heat comes up kind of from the back of your throat or the back of your tongue.
You know what I would recommend is going to Walmart and getting the paste. The jalapeno paste or the ginger paste, you know, those herb paste that we get over in the produce section.
Already processed. Those are great.
Yeah, because they're already ready to go. And you just squeeze a little bit in, and you don't have to worry about, you know, taking out the seeds and the shoulders out of a fresh jalapeno. It's already done for you.
Yeah, especially when it comes to ginger. Ginger's a little bit of a challenge. Oh, I mean, I think it's fun, but I mean, if you've never done it before. But the thing about ginger is it's so fibrous that when you cut the ginger in half, and then you mash it, but when you're cutting it down to mash the long, slender piece that's been cut in half, when you're mashing the inside of that down, you use the back end of the knife because you just want to crush it, and then you go back with the back end of the knife and you scrape it off. And that's the only way to be able to keep those fibers out because there's so many fibers.
Yeah, so you could do a peach and ginger jam. Maybe you could even get lemongrass. Yeah. You could do something with lemongrass.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, I mean, if you took this idea of what we're talking about on a jam or jelly or some kind of a spread, and you use citrus, well, then you'd be going for what they, you know, they would refer to as a marmalade. You know, orange marmalade is probably the most popular. I used to use orange marmalade in my mixture for my duck. You know, I had a raspberry orange sauce with some, I can't remember what it was, cognac or Grand Marnier or something, but it was just great on duck. But, you know. Anyway, hey, so marmalade works too, but again, that's usually going to be citrus. It's going to be usually lemon marmalade, maybe lime, maybe orange, or some other grapefruit marmalade. But I wanted to get to walk through this habanero strawberry jam because, mom got it from one of her, it's Alameda. I don't know, aunt, uncle, niece, cousin, I don't know. We got a big family and there was a lot of people back then, but, it was from Alameda because it says it on here. But anyway, they cooked it in an actual, Dutch oven. and they used 4.5 cups of crushed strawberries, and then 1/2 cup of minced seeded habanero pepper. So the seeds are out, but that's 1/2 cup. That's a lot. When you're eating things that are hot and you're not sure, just don't touch them to your lips. That's good advice. My dad mentioned that. He said it was an older Hispanic person told him that when he was younger. Don't touch your lips to it. Just bite it with your teeth. But anyway, it's just lemon juice, and then they use the powdered, and it was actually used fruit pectin in this, recipe, and then they add the sugar. But go ahead and make sure that when you seal that, when you're canning, that you do have all the equipment that you need to properly can. You can makeshift something. You don't have to actually buy something specifically for canning, but you do want something that you're going to be able to, allow the jars to sit in there and get hot enough so the actual seal. Yeah, if they don't seal, meaning the top lid clicks down, then you don't have a seal. So then, keep it in the refrigerator.
The simplest way is just to do a steam bath. You don't have to do pressure canning with a locking lid. I've actually used the Instant Pot. I don't use it closed and locked with the pressure system. I just use the steam mode and set it on the rack in there, and you can steam cook them to get your jams and jellies and get that lock down.
Yeah. And then also in the jams and jellies, again, it's going to depend on the time of the year when it comes to the sweetness. I know I bought some strawberries a couple days ago on the side of the road, a couple towns away from here. And I thought, well, these should be great because, I mean, they were being picked right there in front of me. But they still weren't quite there yet. They were, we're still not quite into the season where we're getting those strawberries that literally taste like a field of strawberries.
We are super close, though. Super close. They're better than anything you could get in store.
Yeah, they're heading in the right direction. We're just not quite there yet. But I think over the course of the next few months, we're going to have some beautiful strawberries coming in. And I mean, California is one of the strawberry capitals of the world. Driscoll down, on the other side of, Watsonville, down south of Gilroy, kind of on your way to Monterey, like when we went down to, Sardine Factory with Chef Bert down there. Oh, that was a great trip. But you drive literally right through the strawberry fields, and it's pretty cool to see that. But then you can always adjust it if it's not sweet enough. And I would suggest things like, think about maybe things like honey. If you're looking at giving it maybe a little bit of a different twist on it, you can use sugar, but instead maybe think about using brown sugar. Remember, brown sugar is only white sugar that's been, that's encapsulated in, molasses. So know that you're going to get a little bit of that molasses flavor. Generally, people don't taste brown sugar and say, oh, this tastes like molasses, because I don't think they're really thinking about it. But if you have a trained tongue, it's pretty easy to pick that up. That it's like, yeah, there's another flavor in here. And I like molasses, and it's good in a variety of things.
Baked beans.
Yeah, baked beans. But it's just something that it's a different flavor profile. Because it can have some bitterness to it.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of bitter, a little bit deeper in flavor. A touch of caramel. Little bit of that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So. But anyway, jams and jellies. I mean, there's a lot of different things that you can do out there. Especially if you're buying fruit when fruit's in season and you want to maintain those flavors, then, can some. Because the flavors aren't going to diminish once you're canned. Once they're in a can, you're as good as gold, but again, so if you're making that jelly, just think about it. It's going to be that strained fruit. It's going to be clear. It's going to be smooth. It's going to have a firm texture to it. Might even have a little more pectin in, because a jelly, doesn't have that whole fruit to kind of help it stabilize a little bit. But it's not going to have any pieces or chunks of fruit in it. I guess the most common one would be like a grape jelly. Mm-hmm. I think grape jelly would be the one that most people would think of when you think about it, because it doesn't have pieces of grape in it. It's got the flavor of the grape. And then on your jam again, you either want crushed fruit, pureed fruit, smashed fruit. Depends on how chunky you want it, but you want What I think about is I want the piece of fruit to be detectable by appearance. So I want to see that it's a strawberry, not that it's a pureed strawberry. Or I want to see that there's still blueberry in there. I want to see in there that there's mandarin orange or whatever it is you're using. I want to be able to see, I want to be identifiable, I guess is the best way to list it.
Well, and as you cook it down, it is going to break down in size. And one last thing I would do is add maybe some mint or some herbs during the cooking process. You can strain that out. You could take those out so you don't have the actual herbs in there.
And just get that flavor.
Yeah, and just get
the flavor profile.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we appreciate you listening. Thanks again. You can get us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, a little bit of everything. But again, we always appreciate you listening to me and Mrs. Chef, Chef Cal, and Mrs. Chef Krista at Cooking Like a Pro. We will look forward to talking to you next week. God bless you and have a wonderful week.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.